Good evening and good news. Welcome to Good News Updates from Living Compassion. I'm excited tonight to be joined by Susan. Welcome, Susan.
Thanks, Michael.
Good to have you on the air.
Thanks.
Tell me a little bit about parenting as practice.
Parenting as practice. Do you have any more specific questions?
Well.
Or shall I just tell you what I've been looking at?
Tell me what you've been looking at around that, and if more specific questions come to me, I'll certainly ask you.
Okay, great. Well, for me, the thing I've been looking at a lot lately is returning to the breath no matter what, coming into my body, rather than going into my head about the perfect parenting style or parenting approach.
Yes. So coming back to the breath, coming back to what's going on in your body.
Yes. Yes.
And it sounds like you're really the voices that are telling you what is the perfect parenting style.
Absolutely. You know, I had this experience. I had done Zen practice, been practicing for about 7 years before I had my first child. And I had a belief that that would make me the perfect parent.
Uh-huh.
And then I had a first child. And, you know, my conditioning really locked in. I got really small.
Yeah.
And I've just been looking at that ever since, really, you know, attempting to practice, you know, to bring my life into spiritual practice and to practice being in the moment. And for me, the content of children is something that yanks me right out of the moment, particularly being a certain kind of mom.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So when you had your first child, you've been practicing for 7 years. So
yeah.
It was obvious that you were going to be the perfect parent.
Obvious that I was going to be the perfect centered parent.
Say that again. Perfect.
Centered parent.
Centered parent.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Because when you're not centered, you're clearly the wrong parent.
Clearly the wrong parent. Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yes.
And so what you've been looking at is bringing your life, all, it sounds like all of your life, into spiritual practice.
Yes, and I'll just tie it together. When I had my first child, who's now 9, she was about 3 or 4 months old, and I was having issues in the middle of the night with her inability to sleep. Oh.
Yes. Sorry, Susan, are you still there?
Yes.
Okay, great.
I bleeped out for a minute. Anyway, it was suggested to me in guidance that perhaps in the middle of the night I listen to my reassurances. And I thought the person was crazy, clearly. You know, she did not understand the plight that I was going through.
Uh-huh.
And it just seemed beyond me to be able to even try it. You know, what I needed to do in the middle of the night was try and get this baby back to sleep. And then, you know, fast forward now 9 years, and I had an incident, which I think is I was sharing at the monastery the other day with my 5-year-old, and it was not in the middle of the night. It was in the middle of the day,
uh-huh.
And he was not doing something that I wanted him to do. No, in this instance, he had actually just bitten his sister.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and so I, you know, just the energy just courses through, and, you know, I'm just, I want to bite him back, you know, the whole thing.
Yeah.
It's not the first time, by the way. You know, I've tried the nice parent explaining to him, you know, you can hit the pillow, you can bite a stick, you can't bite your sister. Of course it doesn't work.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, there we are. You know, I mean, literally on the ground, I'm 5, he's 5, we're wrestling. He's just, you know, his fist is back, his drool pouring out of his mouth. You know, he's going to get me, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, and I'm going to get him, drool running out of my mouth. You know, just we're in it. We're locked down. And for whatever reason, I can't, you know, grace. I woke up. You know, I came to some sort of consciousness. And it was after doing a lot of unfortunate things, you know, saying mean things, blah, 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 to get him to quit, you know, change. And I just grabbed him and I held his arms really tight and I started saying my reassurances. And my reassurances are things like, I love you. I'm not going to leave you, no matter what. Even though you bit your sister, I'm right here. And I was saying it, of course, to myself because, you know, I had been behaving in the same way. I hadn't bit him yet, but, you know, it was going there. Yeah. And what happened was, as soon as I said, I'm not going to leave you, I'm right here, You're perfect just the way you are. Even when you bite your sister, his arm dropped. His whole body relaxed, and his whole face changed. And, you know, of course, there we go. You know, he was fine.
Wow.
And he was off to play.
Yeah, and I project you were fine, too.
I was fine in that moment, and I had, you know, in the moment, yes, as I'm saying the reassurances, hearing them, I'm really saying them to me, which is always the suggestion, is that we do it with ourselves first. And then he went off to play, and he was fine, and then it came in. Oh, my God, you know, CPS is coming. You're a terrible mother. I can't believe it. Ha, ha, many years of Zen practice, and there you go, losing it. And that's when I started just practicing coming back to the breath, because it's just not useful.
Yeah.
You know, before I thought, yeah, you know, I really need to remember. I need to entertain this. I need to figure out how I got there, what I can do differently. Okay. And so I just would just keep, you know, it kept taking me off. Oh, yeah, I need to go to apologize. But he was not there. You know, it was gone for him.
Yeah.
If I had gone back, I would. I did go back, of course, once or twice, and he looked at me puzzled, you know, like, what are you doing? I'm playing. You know, it was really like a confused look on his face. Well, that was, you know, you said I'm okay. You said you're not going to leave me. I'm playing. So anyway, just looking at, just continuing to come back into the moment. And practice, even when I fail that miserably as a mother, you know, it is not helpful to leave.
Not helpful to leave.
No. Yeah.
Well, I don't know about other people's experience of that story, but it sounded miraculous to me. So I'm just going to reflect that back so at least I can experience the miracle again. So your five-year-old had just bitten his sister, and there you were, the two of you, wrestling on the ground, both of you 5 years old, and then by grace or practice or who knows what, you came to and you held him close to your body and you started saying your reassurances to yourself, and I mean, he was right there with you. And I love you. I'm not going to leave you no matter what. And something changed in him. His arms dropped down. His face changed. Sounds like a lot of tension relaxed.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Now, I will continue what I looked at today, yesterday and today. So this happened maybe last week sometime, Saturday, I think. And so what ego does in my parenting practice, my whole spiritual practice, but since we're talking about parenting, is it comes in and says, great, we've got a tool to get some control of David, my five-year-old.
Yes.
And so today, yesterday, I don't know, both days, you know, he starts screaming, doing something, doing his deal. And so I try it again. I think, aha, I will try my reassurances to get him to behave in the way I wanted to. You know, completely leaving the moment. You know, this was not an in-the-moment reassurance experience. This was an ego takes over my reassurances experience.
Yes.
And now has a plan. And so I just watched. I just watched because, you know, as you can probably guess, nothing happened. you know, he's screaming and doing this thing, and I'm like, David, you know, I'm right here. I don't care. I got it, you know, or whatever. Because, you know, clearly I'm not saying my reassurances to bring me back into the moment and to remind myself that all is well.
Yeah.
And that it's fine that he screams, and it's fine that I get frustrated, and it's fine that we both want to stomp our feet. You know, now ego has come in and is going to take this beautiful experience and try to use it and then tell me it didn't work and it never happened.
I see. So ego is trying to use this reassurance tool as a means to gain control.
Yes, to tell me, yes, to use my, well, actually, to use my practice, to tell me the practice doesn't work.
I see.
It was just a fluke.
I see.
Because the practice is supposed to have a certain what that it looks like, i.e., if I'm practicing correctly, I'm going to be the right mom and he's going to be the right kid and we're all going to float off into the sunset, you know. Yeah. Rather than, what I noticed was, all right, return to my breath, come back into the moment, feel, you know, just come back, feel my feet on the ground. Just breathe, you know, get here. It doesn't matter what here looks like, just get here.
Wow. Get here.
Yeah.
Feel your feet on the ground.
Yeah.
Come back to your breath. Doesn't matter what here looks like.
Yeah. So that's what I continuously am practicing with, leaving and coming back, leaving and coming back. Happens to be that parenting is the content. The kids, mainly.
I see. The kids is the content.
Yeah.
Leave, come back, leave, come back.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you, I'm inspired to bring that into my own parenting practice as well.
Great.
Yes, yes. Susan, I heard a story that reminds me some of that also, which is that we recently heard from a parent of a four-year-old, and I'm thinking here about, you know, building that common ground with your child and engaging with them. We heard from a parent of a four-year-old that she and her daughter went online to the Cantaloupe website to choose a child to partner with. And the mother felt like it was a really fun and interactive way for her daughter to see how lucky she has to have all she has and really to participate in helping others who are less fortunate.
Mm.
So what they're going to do is do some craft projects together and then, quote, sell them to family and friends and raise money for their partner in Cantaloupe.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and the mom said that the daughter talks about the partner all the time.
Wow, that's a neat thing.
Yeah. So to me, it's pointing at the same thing that you're pointing at, which is getting in touch with ourselves to see what's going on so that we can better connect with, you know, our kids and everyone around us.
Yeah. Yep. Was there anything else?
That's it. Thanks for taking the time today, Susan.
Okay. Thanks for asking.
Okay.
Take care. Bye.
Good evening, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good evening, Sherry.
Good evening, Michael. That was very fun.
It was very fun, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
I
got inspired during that conversation. I think I want to do some parenting workshops.
Oh, great.
Because it's such a big part of so many people's lives. And it is such a, as with any relationship, of course, any relationship with anyone or anything, it's a great place to practice. And sometimes, of course, it's the most, it's the easiest place for self-hate to get a hold of a person and torture them. Because if you're messing up, you're not only messing up your own life and the lives of the other adults around you, but you're messing up your children's lives. And that's the worst possible accusation for a parent. So it's just such a great story that Susan was telling about doing the work for herself and then the powerful effect on her family. And, of course, also a great reminder that and what's going to follow that is egocentric karmic conditioning or self-hatred grabbing a hold of it to use whatever against us, which is, you know, always what happens.
Yes, 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 that's inspiring. And
yeah.
It's interesting, too, for me. You know, I have external children, and I have a lot of internal children as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So the parenting goes on everywhere.
Oh, yeah, because and you also have a partner who has a lot of internal children and
yes.
external children. And then, you know, practically everybody we know, as we know, we're all in a child state an awful lot of the time. So... Much opportunity for compassionate parenting.
Yes, yes, indeed. Sherry, we have some callers here.
Good.
Hey. First caller, you are now live on the air. Could you please introduce yourself?
Good evening, this is Beth.
Hey, Beth.
Hey, Sherry.
What's going on in your world?
Here in humble submission. You know, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply bow.
Uh-huh. And sacrifice?
yeah, all thoughts, all tensions and desires.
Uh-huh. Pressures and desires.
Pressures and desires. on the spot.
That's a good one, isn't it?
It is. It is. Kind of looking at sacrificing desires.
Uh-huh.
But also,
now, for those of folks who don't track this really closely, you're quoting something from the Daily Recollection.
Yes.
Right, one of the beads in the Daily Recollection. Okay, go.
Kind of a daily reminder kind of thing that I was sitting here this evening and kind of like I'm in a place in my life where I don't have anything to bow to.
Uh-huh.
Except every, you know, it's like, and just kind of really grateful to be able to bow to you.
Hmm.
And not to you, but through you.
Now,
so just showing a great deal of gratitude to the practice.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, actually in my work, I start each of my jobs with a bow. When I enter the house, I always bow.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, but yeah.
Okay. Can I make a suggestion at this juncture, not knowing where you're headed next?
Okay.
I would suggest that on a regular basis, you find a full-length mirror?
I know where you're going.
Uh-huh.
It's part of that taking care of myself again, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just a deep bow to the person who is making the effort and doing the practice and showing up and going through all that's involved in a human incarnation.
In interesting times we live in.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of there's a, my business has been very successful for a number of years, and lately it has not been successful. And finding that, you know, there's a lot of pressure that kind of goes with that,
mm-hmm.
like survival, and
yeah.
kind of like seeing how I turn to conditioning in order to survive.
Yes. Yes, a very, what do I want to say, a very, I don't want to say common, but you're not alone in that. An awful lot of people, when confronted by something frightening, instead of turning to center for that wisdom, love, and compassion that animates us, the unconditional that can actually take care of us, the just knee-jerk, overwhelming impulse is to turn to the voices of conditioning for advice and direction. And, of course, as you know, it's exactly the worst place for us to turn, but that's what people do.
Which is kind of like bringing full circle back to the Daily Recollection in that it's in the bowing and sacrificing pressures, you know, with these
yes.
things that I believe in. To be real, you know, just they're not real. Letting them go.
Yeah, they're not real. And of course, you've been doing practice long enough that you've been able to watch how most of the time when we are in a really tight spot, that same place that we look to get us out of it is what got us into it.
Oh, I wish I could hear that. Can you say it again?
Well, we listen to the voices, even though we think we're not. You know, we're trying to pay attention. We're trying to come back to center.
Oh,
but really,
yes.
we're being guided by the voices of egocentric karmic
yes, conditioning. And deeper and deeper down.
Deeper and deeper into it we go. And then when we hit bottom, we look to them to get us out because we're desperate and afraid and urgent and you can't stand to listen to the voices anymore, so we look to the voices to get us out of
yes.
a situation that only exists because we're listening to the voices.
And there's kind of this vague memory of practice.
Right.
You know, that there's another possibility, but, you know, this is real and I got to deal with this.
That's right. And that vague possibility, it's just too threatening because, you know, If we talk to someone in the practice, they're going to say, well, you know, what you need to do is just drop all of that. Come back to the breath. Come back. And all those voices are screaming, are you insane? insane?
I don't know how.
Desperate.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
Yeah,
I don't
there
know
is no
how. I don't
but
know
here
how.
In humble submission, in order to experience this perfect now, I deeply bow.
Yeah,
and sacrificing all those thoughts, pressures, tensions, and desires, and that's not right either, but...
Yeah, exactly. Because when we're in that place and we're in relationship with voices, not only are they screaming, I don't know how, but the thing they're screaming without ever letting us hear it is, and I don't want to.
Yes.
Yeah, don't tell me any of that stuff. I don't want to know. You know, when we are disidentified, it's all so easy and so obvious, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, and delightful.
And delightful. Every problem that we have. Now, of course, you know, everybody wants to argue for their own problems and how their problems are the worst problems and all of that. But when we're disidentified, we realize, of course, that that's not true. But we can look at any situation in life and know that the answer is let go.
Ha. Yes.
Always. Across. But I need to do this thing that's really important. No, in fact, you don't. You need to do nothing until you realize that nothing is important. So I've got to take care of this thing. I have this responsibility. I have these obligations. There are these people. There are these whatever it is. And I need to know.
Yeah.
If that's what's going on, what you need to do is drop it all and stop. But, of course, when we're caught in it, that's the last thing we're interested in doing.
Yeah. I have recently attained my heart's desire.
Ooh.
And finding that that is such a slippery slope. Because
uh-huh.
I will exchange what I think is my heart's desire for my true heart's desire without a qualm.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yep. Over and over and over again. Because it's in essence, this is not actually true, but close enough for Buddhist work. It's two different people. So when you're identified with that separate self, what looks real and right and true and important and urgent is one thing. And when you come
right.
back to center, what you see is something completely different.
Right, and there's nothing that's not allowed.
Oh,
I mean, it doesn't mean that I can't have my heart's desire. It just means that I'm not the only... I mean, it's like what Susan was saying when she was talking with Michael about parenting. It's like, and then conditioning comes in and takes over the heart's desire.
Yes, because if there is a heart's desire that is in conflict with authenticity,
yes.
then it's not authentic.
Then
I mean,
it's
my
not
heart's
authentic.
Desire... cannot be driving a Rolls Royce.
Yes, then it's a sugar house, like
yeah.
Hansel and Gretel.
Yeah. So it can see, you know, what do I want? Oh, more than anything else, I want a relationship that, no, I'm sorry, that is not your deepest heart's desire. You know, I just want my own company that's really, no. That is not your deepest heart's desire. We're not, you know, we're not even in the realm of the heart yet. And yet, when we are coming from that authentic centered place, there's nothing to say any of that won't happen. It might all happen. But it's a side effect.
Yes, it is a side effect. And it would not happen without the practice.
Exactly.
Yeah. But it's also nothing to hold on to. It's also part of the sacrificing, you know, the desires in order to experience this perfect now.
That's right. And I cycle through this, you know, periodically, and I seem to be cycling back through. But the the most powerful guidance on this, probably that's ever been articulated. Not my will, but thy will be done.
Yes.
I mean, that's just it. And whether, you know, what we think we're talking to is something we call God, or what we think we're talking to is something we call life, or authenticity, or that which is, or however we frame it, it's all the same thing. That which animates me is in absolute charge of this life, owns this life. This life belongs to that. And so, not my
Thank
will,
God.
But thy will be done.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and that is my true heart's desire.
Yes. Yes, our true heart's desire is to be at one with that which animates us. And we can phrase that in all kinds of ways, and we experience, different people experience that in different ways. But that's what it comes down to. Yeah, and
so,
that's what, here, in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply bow and sacrifice all of the things that my little ego thinks it wants and needs in order to be all right, so that I can receive, recognize, return to, be embraced in that which animates me. It's what makes us religious types. All right, so get that full-length mirror out. Do a little deep showing.
Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Beth. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, some people may not know what the daily recollection is.
Yeah, well, why don't you let them know?
Okay.
You know what it is, huh?
I know what it is. It's a recitation that's said at the beginning of the first meditation every day at the monastery. And to me, it reminds us in many different ways the fundamentals of the practice that we do.
Yes. Yeah. And sometimes people will use it wisely, I would say, throughout the day.
Yeah.
So during times of stress, people will often report that they just start saying the daily recollection as a way of coming back to center. Sometimes people tell me that they use it in a very kind of traditional Zen sort of way, in that they'll have an understanding that comes to them. They'll have an awareness. And when that happens, what accompanies it is a line from the daily recollection.
Oh, wow.
So that they, you know, they make a connection between that recitation and their own life experience.
Yes.
It's a very powerful practice tool.
Oh, yes, in my experience, definitely.
Some things that, I still, after all of these years, I'll get something, you know, I'll have an awareness about a line in the daily recollection that's brand new. It's kind of like when we do the precepts retreat, and we, you know, some of us have been through those precepts a few times, and yet there's always something new to be seen and understood in them.
Yes, yes, it's my experience as well. Sherry, we're going to take a quick break here, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
The Zen Blues Quartet is a collaborative music project celebrating life and the music of the blues. Good musicians and good friends coming together to make something really beautiful, simply because we can. Zen Blues Music. For myself, as a Zen student, I see a direct connection between playing the blues and awareness practice, because for me, both seem to require a willingness to be really present in the moment. Zen Blues Quartet is proud to sponsor Open Air Talk Radio with Sherry Huber, as we firmly believe that the quality of your life is dependent on the focus of your attention.
What a life, what a life.
visit us at www.zenbluesmusic.com for more information about our project.
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have another caller.
All right.
Okay, next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Yeah, hi, Sherry. This is Freddie.
Hi, Freddie.
How you doing?
I'm good. You?
Good, good.
What's going on?
Well, I've been trying, kind of seeking out conditioning, and and so I did that, and it was pretty furious as far as the reaction I got. Of course, I had, I think, what I projected as a scared child inside of me, you know, freaking out that I would do that to that child, put him in that situation. And then, you know, I had kind of self-hate conditioning saying, you know, what the heck are you doing? And then I had all the energy along with that. And so I was just trying to stick with my breath. And, you know, it was fine, but it, I had kind of like these three forces bearing down on me. And then, you know, I was in the situation I was in, not all the time, but at times, you know, there are times that I might have to interact with other people.
Uh-huh.
And so I guess I'm not sure what to do at that time because, you know, it's all I can do to, you know, kind of maintain some sanity without even talking in that situation, given the, you know, everything, you know, at play. So, and so I was, so my question is, as far as kind of asking another subpersonality to come along, who's definitely more adept at facing those situations. And then a thought came, well, that's not, you know, okay to the personality I have now because they're not going to learn to get through this and yada, yada, yada. And so I was just curious,
well,
you know, about some pointers about that.
Yeah, my approach to it is to live as much of life from center as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the ways that we talk about this is having a mentor. So there you are in a situation, and say, you know, you're in a meeting at work, and what you would be attempting to do is be in that meeting from center. Now, oftentimes we go unconscious, we forget, whatever, and somebody goes into the situation who really shouldn't be there, a child. Goes to a meeting at work. And so then when that happens, of course, if you come to partway through the meeting, then you can just mentor the child, you know, reassure him that he doesn't really need to be there. This is not really a good place for a child anyway. And so how about if he just, you know, relaxes and you'll take over. And then in other times in your life, you will be in that mentoring relationship with the young parts of yourself. And you will essentially model for them how to be, rather than tossing them into a situation kind of with a sink or swim mentality.
Yeah. And as far as how to be go, I mean, how to be would just return to center, right? Because there's really no way for them to be, because that would kind of, wouldn't that be the death of them as that, you know, little child sub-personality? I mean, we can't change them.
That's
where I'm kind of confused.
What you can do is, so say you're in a situation where a bunch of friends get together on the weekend. And they're going, you know, all of you decide that you're going to play some sort of game. You know, you're going to play baseball or you're going to play frisbee or whatever it is that you're going to play. And so you would want to let young parts of you come out and be there.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't want them to be left alone.
Okay.
So they are there, but they're operating within conscious, compassionate awareness. So, you know, sometimes in that situation, even with friends or family, loved ones, people will go unconscious. And maybe there's somebody there who gets threatened or whatever it is and gets a little mean or a little aggressive or you know, start saying hurtful things or whatever. You don't want to not be there so that the child has to take that.
Yeah.
So you let the child be there in this context of safety, but you really are overseeing the whole thing. So if somebody were to get aggressive or whatever, you would be right there to put the child behind you, and from a centered place, you would interact with the other adult or whoever it is at that point.
Okay, yeah. So as far as anytime we're not centered, I mean, so subpersonalities only come out when we're not fully centered, or they come out?
No, they can they can be there. In fact, the most, I think, probably the most effective awareness practice, or when the best kind of training happens, is when you are allowing a young part of yourself to be there, and you are fully present as conscious awareness.
Okay.
So can you get a sense of that?
Yeah.
So what you're doing then is experiencing that child. So often when people are looking at aspects of the personality, of course, one personality is looking at another personality, or this kind of skin, eye, identity is looking at a personality.
Mm-hmm.
But to be there with a part of yourself as conscious, compassionate awareness, it's experiencing that part of yourself from the inside out with complete understanding and acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
So you really get, say it's a frightened four-year-old. You're not experiencing that frightened four-year-old with any kind of older conditioned judgment.
Mm-hmm.
It's right there feeling what the world looks like to him and how it feels in his body and what that fear means to him and what he needs in order to be taken care of. It's not an intellectual, analytical kind of a process. It's an immediate feeling, sensing, intuiting, knowing process. And so the compassion is immediate and total.
Okay. And so it's definitely not trying to, because I feel like the support that I try to give myself have been kind of standard-based, like, well, if you do this, then you'll get this type of thing.
Yeah.
But that's obviously doesn't sound like an appropriate thing, and that's what I've been experiencing. So.
Well, it sounds a lot like parenting.
Yeah.
As we started the show. I mean, you know, regular, traditional parenting. You know, if you can keep your room clean for a week, then you can go on that bicycle ride with your friends. It's fine in terms of sort of behavior modification or crowd control or that sort of thing, but it is not the unconditional compassion that we're talking about in practice.
Yeah, I think I've been incorporating too many outside things, kind of instead of staying within type of thing, because those outside things that I was saying that I would get or whatnot were always ever changing, and definitely no guarantees as far as them getting that support. So.
Yeah, and the thing that's interesting to me in that, from a practice perspective, is for you to begin to, this is where I talk about out of the corner of your eye, out of the corner of your eye, try to get a sense of who's running that show. Because that's somebody with a tremendous control and influence over all of these aspects of the personality. So who is he, and what axe is he grinding?
So basically, you always try to maintain on center as much as possible, and you're going to have these spontaneous sub-personalities coming to you, but it's obviously our responsibility to stay centered so they can come out in a respectful setting.
Well, yes, and mostly, I mean, it really is like ideal parenting. like you wanted to be parented. So, you know, you were 6 years old and you'd be in a situation and something would just occur to you and you would just say it. And if you had had the ideal parent there, then that parent would have helped you see where that fits in socially and why people react the way they react and what the expectations are and how that really has nothing to do with you and all of those kinds of things. So that's the relationship that you are moving toward being in with yourself. It's not that you attempt to move to center in order to control or to be perfectly appropriate, because center would be, if this is not exactly right, but it's close, center would be more interested in you being as you are and being free within that.
Okay.
So you would say something and everybody would turn around and look at you, and from that, and then center that, and that mentoring influence would help that young part to understand what just happened.
Okay.
So
and definitely not. Go ahead.
So much of traditional parenting is just jump on him and make sure he never does anything like that again.
Well, the thought that kind of came up was, and definitely don't act as a filter. So as far as you tell me what you're going to say first before I even let you say it out loud. I mean, obviously that's not me saying that. It's obvious that I wouldn't do that, but it's
right. But you know, in the beginning, there will be stages. Okay, so in the beginning, as you know, you'll just say or do things and then kind of come to consciousness.
Yeah,
you know that one. Yeah, because a lot of times people aren't there. And so there's that. Then you'll get to that stage where you know that it's going to happen, and there's an impulse to stop it. And so you'll probably do that for a while. And then you will get to the place of going past conditioning's information about, no, you can't say that, no, you can't do that. And you will begin to see what's so about that. So there will be times when conditioning will say, you can't say that. But you'll stop and look at it and say to yourself, well, why not? I mean, it's not offensive, really. It's not, you know, it's just I was taught that I couldn't say that or be that. Or, you know, you can't just walk down the street and break into a soft shoe because you feel good. Well, why not? You know, why? So you'll get to the place of allowing yourself to do all kinds of things. So you'll be aware of what's going to happen right before it happens.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
And there will be times when you'll say, no, 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 no.
Yeah.
That would not be good. No, telling her that she's fat it's not gonna serve anybody. And there'll be other times when you'll say when there'll be that impulse and you'll think, well, let's see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Because what we're going for is freedom. Not to be obnoxious, that's not it, but freedom to be authentic and spontaneous and in the moment and all right.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
And the moment, you know, the moment is authentic and genuine. So when we are socially obnoxious, it's usually because we are identified with ego, not with the innocence of authentic nature. That the innocence of authentic nature can be surprising, but rarely offensive.
Okay. And then last question, does center have a personality? So, because I at times when I'm centered, you just kind of react to the moment, I feel at least. And, you know, I'm just kind of lighthearted, upbeat. But is that not still a sub-personality? You know,
well, that is a great place to explore. A lot of people will have the idea that center is just not even tapioca pudding, because tapioca has that, you know, those little lumps in it, but more just kind of mashed potatoes. And, of course, ego would like us to believe that that's the case, that center is really neutral and bland and all of those things. I like to look at it as everything else in nature. So, you know, a rabbit is pretty much always a rabbit. It's not a goldfish or a, you know, a seal or something else. But within that, there's a tremendous latitude. So it's not like there's just one way a rabbit always is, but there's a great range of response to life. And that is, to me, the easiest way to sort of get a sense of center without getting a lot of ideas about what center is, because as we know, only egocentric karmic conditioning wants to have an idea of what center is so that it can then say, well, that wasn't very centered.
Yeah. So it's just what's appropriate to the moment, I mean, which we say quite a bit. Okay.
Yep.
Okay, cool. And then the self-hate ever use... Oh, yeah. And does self-hate ever use I? Like, because, I mean, in your experience or... people you've spoken with, because I kind of get that with me right now that I might.
Yeah, nothing is 100%.
Okay.
So especially as the system catches on that you're looking for you voices, it could switch over to I.
Okay.
Yeah. So
that's
once again, the more we practice, the more subtle we have to be, because everything else is getting more subtle too.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, great. All right, thank you for your time. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Freddie. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to take a quick break here, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
Watchdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Porchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have three more callers in the queue here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Jen.
Hey, Jen.
Hey.
You got a report?
I got a report, yeah.
All right, what happened?
All right,
First of all, remind the listeners who might have missed the last time about what your project was.
Okay, yes. Well, I was to kind of look at managing my attention and my energy because I was seeing that I was losing attention and energy, but I wasn't quite sure how or where that was happening. So I was looking at that.
Okay.
Yeah. So so I saw a lot, and I the resistance to making the call tonight, too. I just wanted to – that's like I think another – you know, a little sidebar of attention, like it was really hard to, there was a lot of resistance to calling in.
You get a gold medal for being able to pick up that phone and punch those numbers?
I think, yeah, I'm like shaking and everything else.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. But, yeah, so I saw a lot. A lot of what I saw was just, I feel still even saying it because I think it's just obvious, but, you know, conditioning, just finding stories that are compelling to me and taking me off into those stories. And that's big with the attention. And then once the attention goes off with conditioning, the energy gets sucked out too with whatever. Lots of times there's an emotional response attached to the story, like getting really angry or crying or whatever it is that kind of sucks up all the energy.
Uh-huh. Good
for
you.
So that was a big...
Good for you. That's the whole deal, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it, like I said, it seemed, you know, then the voices told me it was too obvious to say. But, yeah, there was just a lot of that. I spent a lot of time in a lot of those stories, and then I kind of did catch on to the end result being, you know, attention is with conditioning and energy is gone.
So
another thing I was...
Just 1 second about that, because, of course, conditioning is going to tell you it's obvious once you catch on to it. But it's like, you know, if you have a, I don't even know if this they do this anymore, but like you have a television show and they find out how many people are watching the show, and then they get their, you know, they either get to continue the show or the show gets dropped based on how many people are tuning into the show. And that's a great example, or not an example, but it's just like that. It's just like that, where so you get pulled into a show, basically, and then if there's enough drama in it, if there's enough heartbreak and all of that, enough romance, then good things happen. So lots of energy is built up, and then the reward is it all gets siphoned out to the sponsors.
Yes, exactly, yeah.
Yeah? And if not, then that show gets dropped, and we need to fill that space with another show that can generate the kind of audience reaction that we need to feed the sponsors.
Yes.
It's a good image, isn't
absolutely.
It?
It's a very good image. I can totally see them, you know, tuning in to what demographic am I today, and then, yeah.
Precisely.
Yeah, and I also was just looking at meditation, and, well, I was kind of looking at kindness with that, because I also saw that just in this move and then having visitors and whatever, just life-changing, my meditation practice was changing and kind of slipping away, really, to be honest. I mean, it was kind of there in some form, but I think the commitment to really pay attention was definitely, you know, the voices were kind of taking over, but it was tricky because it was in the name of kindness, like, oh, well, you know, it's good to not have standards on your practice. You can just kind of meditate, you know, when you can, or if you, you know, I think that there is some of that, like, but I think that there is a kindness that is also saying the kindest thing here is to find a way to have a consistent practice, because that's going to actually take care of this person. And I just,
because
kind of played with that. Yeah.
Yeah. Here's another one. It, you know, it's really kind not to have brushing your teeth as a big should, you know, you need to, you know, it's good to brush your teeth, and whenever you think of it and whenever you get a chance, you can go ahead and do that. But, you know, you can't twist yourself up in knots over here. Have another candy bar.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so with that, it's like, no, why did this get to be an issue in the first place?
Mm-hmm.
So why is somebody saying this is something that I should be having some emotion about anyway? It's a way I take care of myself. It's like eating, drinking water, sleeping. These are things that I just do because I'm a human being, and that's what human beings need. And so having time to come back to center and be in touch with that which animates me is as essential as breathing clean air and drinking good water.
Yeah, it's so good to hear you putting it that way, and I'll definitely listen to this again, because, yeah, so that's interesting. Why does it get put into, like, this optional category? Because it is that, and I started to see it's just this is something that I need, but then it gets me with kind of, well, other people don't seem to need that. You know, what's wrong with you that you knew, you know, whatever, and that's just a whole other sidebar that it can take me down, but, yeah, meditation, just something that is kind for this being.
And the idea that being kind to yourself would be not sleeping. You know, you don't need to have these rigid standards about having to sleep every 24 hours. You know, come on, stop being such a hard nose. Try lighten up, relax a little bit. And you would think, where does that come from? And then, of course, the way you described it, it goes immediately into the hateful. Well, other people don't need it. What's the matter with you that you need it? You know, so it's like, whoa, got a little going about that, their voices?
Yeah, which is probably a great clue to know, you know, how upset the voices get around it, that it's something that I want to keep doing. So,
Yeah.
Exactly. And another one that I am seeing, too, is the computer. You know, I'm not interacting with a lot of humans so much in my current life.
You have 2 minutes left on this call.
The computer seems to be like this opportunity, probably because there's a, you know, there, in the way that I currently am with the computer, there are lots of ways to go unconscious or not be there, you know, like I'll get on with the intention of, okay, I need to send these 3 emails. And then before I know it, I've spent 2 hours, I'm glassy eyed, I feel terrible, I don't know what I just did, but I'm frantic about it, or I'm really upset about the content of the emails. And I think it's I want to find some ways to practice, like maybe just, okay, I'm on the computer if I have work to do there for 10 minutes and then I check in or something, because that's
a big thing.
Do
you have a kitchen timer?
I do, yes.
Yeah, that could be a great aid. So, you set it and make sure that it's one of those that kind of goes for a while. Set it on the other side of the room. And set it for 10 minutes or whatever it is, so that you have to get up and walk over there and get the thing, you know, to turn it off. So that, and that begins to remind you to come to conscious awareness that computer is an energy suck, and that movement, that get up and go across the room. You'll remind yourself, you know, you might even put a sign behind it. The one from the email class, what kind of universe are you creating right now? And, you know, have something like that there, that you start training yourself to check in. What's my energy like? How am I feeling? Is it time to walk outside and look at the sky and see if I can hear a bird and breathe some fresh air, and, you know, and then make a conscious decision about what I'm going to do. Am I going to go back and continue with the computer, or am I going to do something else? And then part of it, of course, has to be setting the dinger again.
Yeah.
And it's such
good
practice.
You have exceeded your time limit on this call. Sorry, we cannot process your call at the moment. Please try again later.
Is anyone there?
Sherry, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, good. It seems like we lost Jen.
Well,
and,
I got the notice saying the call is over.
Yes, I heard that also. And as far as what I'm looking at, we're still going, and I see other callers here.
Okay, well, let's try it then, huh?
Let's try it.
Maybe Jen will come back.
Okay, we have another caller on here now. You are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Angela.
Hi, Angela.
Oh, hi. Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
I'm calling from Korea.
Wow.
Yeah. And wow, it took a lot to finally call you. I'm really quite thrilled that I did that I pulled that off.
Well, we are quite thrilled too. What time is it where you live?
Well, it's good. It's 10 in the morning, almost 10.
All right.
Yeah.
That's perfect.
It is perfect. It
so
is perfect.
So what's going on in your world in Korea?
Well, mostly I'm on Reflective Listening Buddies, and I've done a couple of email classes with you.
Uh-huh.
But I haven't been back to North America since I kind of discovered your awareness practice work.
Uh-huh.
And so I, even though I have a reflective listening buddy, and I'm also hooked up to the practice opportunity now, it just felt like the next step was to call in and really sort of publicly talk
make
out
your
loud.
Appearance.
Yes.
Yes. Very good.
Yes.
Very
and
good.
And yeah, because I noticed that one of the things that was coming up was that I was, it's an old, I've heard it many times, but about how I'm cut off and I'm not part of the group, and I'm, it was starting to seem that I wasn't understanding what some of the things you were saying in the practice opportunity letters, and that I was missing something, and that was probably because I hadn't been at a There's Nothing Wrong With You workshop, and that I was out of sync, basically.
And now are you suspecting more that it's simply what voices do to try to torture a person when they're attempting to wake up and end suffering?
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And I especially see it now when you say that, of course.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
What will you fall for that's going to take you up into your head where the voices can get you in a conversation about what's mm-hmm. wrong, so that you'll give all of your attention and energy to them instead of being with yourself in the moment, enjoying your life?
Right, and it's so much about what will you fall for, isn't it?
Oh my God. It's like, you know, there's this giant chart, and there are all of the headings, and it just,
right.
Yeah, it just keeps going through.
All
that?
The possible things it could talk about and narrows it down. These aren't working. These don't work.
Yeah,
this one.
She'll go for that one.
Yeah, this one will work really well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, of course, our job as practitioners is to be paying attention so that we get a sense of what we fall for. And
mm-hmm.
it's really very straightforward. What causes you to suffer?
Mm-hmm.
That's it. So what do I need to let go? What do I need to drop? What do I need to turn my attention away from? That which causes me to suffer. That
yes.
which makes me feel urgent or anxious or worried or tense. That which takes me into the future or the past. Anything that's fearful or angry or upset or the okay, there. There. That's it. Drop that.
Right.
Yeah. And of course the voices are screaming, you can't drop that. It's really important. What are you gonna do? You have to figure this out. You have to think about this. Drop that and get back.
Right, because the clue is am I revved up? Am I, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Am I freaking out? Am I, you
yes.
know,
yes.
obsessing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Am I those things? Okay,
mm-hmm.
that's what I need to drop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's so simple and straightforward, but
mm-hmm.
we fall for it every time because the subject is something we're going to buy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
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 So
yeah, that we've
know,
bought before over the years and have a whole kind of, you know, a book written about how
precisely.
It's true.
Yes. So,
yeah.
You know, if you're a person who gets upset over injustice, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's an endless list of injustices.
Yeah.
If it's, you know, uh-huh. that it's your fault or it's your responsibility, okay. Have we got a list for you? Yeah. So as practitioners, we catch on to what our own particular hooks and buttons are.
Yeah.
So that when those are affected, we can recognize it for what it is and nip it Because if we stay with it for two sentences,
yeah,
chances are it's going to have us.
Mm-hmm. Would you say it's limited, like my voices are limited?
What do you mean by limited? Can you give me an example?
I mean, they're not probably going to cook up something about, I don't know.
Oh, God, no. Yes.
Yeah.
They are programs.
Yes.
They are karmic programs.
They are not creative.
Now, they need to, and they are very much like a computer. So, you know, I have a Gmail. And so when I get my mail, the system reads the emails and then puts ads on the side, which is so creepy, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
It's very creepy.
When I started realizing what it was doing, I thought, that's creepy.
That's creepy. So it's like that. Conditioning can say, well, that's like that. So it can put that kind of connection together. She got upset over that. I bet she'll get upset over this.
Mm-hmm.
But it can create a new reaction pattern for you.
Okay.
Yeah, it can't think up something that's already in there.
Right. Okay, I can see that. I can sense.
That's why with aspects of the personality, when we work with them, there's how it manifests, a particular aspect manifests as you are at this age. But we could go back 5 years and see what it was focused on then, 5 years before, all the way back to your earliest memory of feeling, reacting, being that way. So it's just come forward through time, gaining information, and we could say getting more sophisticated, but the essence of it remains exactly the same.
I see.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see.
It's just the most fun a person can have, really.
Well, I just want to say that I guess in the past couple of weeks, I've actually started feeling that I'm practicing.
Good for you.
I think before that, it was more like, I can't do this, and it was a constant struggle, and you know, 1 second of the day I might have some awareness and thinking it was impossible, and that, you know, how do these people do it? They must have a special gene, and you know.
Yeah, being told it was impossible.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden that shift happens, and you realize that your feet are on the path. And it doesn't mean that you might not go along and realize that one foot is in the ditch or you've kind of wandered off on a side trail or something. But you never really go back to that, I don't know if this is for me or I don't know what this is about. You just reach that point where you acknowledge to yourself, yes, in fact, I do know, and this is what I'm going to do.
Yes.
Yeah, which
yes,
is...
Yes, in this, fact, this... Yes.
A blessing.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
I have a big kind of what seems like a big issue to talk to you about, but I know I've taken up a lot of, maybe I'll call you back.
Good. Oh, do that.
Yeah, within a week or two.
That's right. Stay in touch.
Yeah, okay.
There's no reason, just because you're in Korea and we're in California, there's no reason not to be in touch.
No, that's right. That's right.
It's a great time to be alive.
That's right. And it's easy to be in touch. So
Yeah, it is.
So I will. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So thank you, Sherry, very much.
Thank you, Angela.
Okay.
Good night, or good morning.
Okay. Good night. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Angela. You've been listening to Open Air with Sherry. Sherry, that's a lot of fun.
It is. There is nothing as much fun as spiritual practice.
Yes. Yes. We did have one more caller in the queue. I'm not sure what happened with Jen. I hope she will call us back next week to continue.
Yes, and whoever didn't make it on the air, I hope will be first next week.
Yes, that sounds wonderful.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Sherry.
Good night.
Good night.